across Wisconsin from Civic Media. This is Up North News Radio. Now, live from our Lake Wissota studio, here's the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Breitlow.
Thank you, Don Rue, my old radio friend from way, way back in the day. I hope you're enjoying your semi-retirement, and you really got to get lunch one of these times. Merry Christmas to you and to Val, and happy holidays to everybody else out there. As we get set to wrap up live shows for the year, it's also our 250th show, which is my excuse to just pause for a minute and thank you once again for making us a part of your mornings. And especially thanks to the Civic Media folks, because as I often say, mostly to cover their backside, not mine, that Up North News is a separate entity from the Civic Media Radio Network, but we both have very similar values about, informing the Wisconsin communities, our friends, our neighbors about goings on, and thrilled to get these 2 hours every weekday morning to work with the folks at Civic Media and share what we do over at upnorthnewswi.com. You can join us along the way here on the studio line, 844-967-2789. You can email us radio@upnorthnewswi.com. And don't forget, if you get that Civic Media app, you can call us or text us right from the app. We'd love to have you along on this December 14th, which means it's National Energy Conservation Day. That makes sense. We're heading into winter. National Bouillabaisse Day, for no good reason whatsoever. And National Roasted Chestnuts Day, which is where I think we have to bring Dr. Lyerly back into the conversation because she's got her Santa hat on. So if anybody's going to sing about chestnuts roasting, it's going to be...
It's already playing in my head.
I knew
it. Yeah, I don't know the words, though.
I was going to say...
Jack Frost nipping at your nose, everybody.
No, not everybody. You are the only one having the eggnog this morning so far. And very happy. Luke Mathers is in for Greg Bach out there in Waukesha. And joining us now is Nancy Stinsel from Marathon County. Nancy, how are you?
I'm great. So right. Good to be back on your show again. Thank you.
I know. Well, here's the thing. I imagine when we first started Up North News, I envisioned that we were going to do a whole lot with Wausau, with Mary Katie Rosenberg, with all kinds of folks. And then this guy, Chad Holmes, shows up. And Chad has got more talent. He's locally based. He's younger. He's more handsome. And I just can't compete with that. So, he takes care of all that good Wausau coverage from 8 to 10 in the morning. But every so often, I got to get an update from Central Wisconsin. And that's why I'm glad you came along, because you have been so tireless on so many different issues. I think most notably clean water, though. There's been a lot of talk about, the PFAS in the water and getting that cleaned up and the work that Katie Rosenberg and you and many others have done. But there's still threats to the water cleanliness as well, especially for proposed mining, which seems to be a perpetual thing there and will be, as long as people like Tom Tiffany are allowed in positions of responsibility. What has 2023 been like in terms of water protection for the Northwoods, for people like you?
Well, it's been quiet, which is a good thing. But at the same time, we are relentless with our continuing education on it. We have the Bend and the Reef have been pretty silent. I've done at the university level, I've done a PowerPoint to just get everybody up to speed so they know what's going on. I chair the Coalition to Save the Menominee River up in Marinette, Menominee. And there we continue our work. Goro, the company up there, Gold Resource, their stock is just declining. I think it was down to it bottomed at 26 cents a share. I think they're back up to around 29. And we watch that because the price of gold is kind of going up right now. And then recently this year, the focus has really been on Copperwood, which where they want to put a mine in the Porcupine State Park. If you can believe that.
Oh, yeah, I can totally believe it.
Yep, with a tailings dam that slopes and will, if anything goes wrong, and we know it will, would put heavy metals and everything else and contaminate Lake Superior. And, yeah, how can they do that?
And here, well, here's the thing. There was on the books for the longest time in Wisconsin, a very simple premise that you can come mine if you can prove that prove it first that you've done it, cleanly. And that even after the mine was no longer operating for a certain period, it still didn't contaminate. If that's what you can do, then come and do it. But if you're coming here just to extract and then pollute the water and do all this damage, you know, that's not a great thing. But again, unless you're like Tom Tiffany and other people who are just looking at the short term, you know, here are some people making a paycheck for a little while. And I would, by the way, add to that, I can look out my window and see an empty, an abandoned sand plant, and there's abandoned sand plants and sand mines all over Chippewa County and other environs. I don't know what makes people think the same thing wouldn't happen up there by you.
It was totally boom and bust there by you. And not only that, but Tom Tiffany and his cronies allowed mining companies to rewrite that bill. And they rewrote it because, I mean, obviously no one could ever prove it first. They did like recently sign off, the DNR signed off on the Flambeau mine, but that's still Stream C is void of any life yet today. And we need to get back to prove it first. Our friends in Minnesota have. They're watching diligently. They're not going to let some Canadian company come in and destroy your properties for the sake of a little bit of what, gold? You know, we have a ton of gold. We don't need to be mining for more. And this isn't, I think what people don't understand is this not going to create jobs here. It's not. Most of these companies bring in their own, and not only bring in their own, but when the mining that they're doing today, 99% of what they bring up out of the earth is waste rock. And that's what goes in these tailings dams. This is what, where the tailings dams break. You got heavy metals entering your waterways. And God knows we've got enough problems with water, with PFAS and everything else.
And the thing isn't there also a concern that even just the test drilling to look for potential, you know, mining locations, couldn't the test drilling itself cause harm to the water table?
Yes, it can. They are finding, I think Pennsylvania was the last state now that is going to ban. There's like certain secret ingredients that they can put in drilling fluids, and they don't have to disclose all their trade secrets. Colorado has banned PFAS in drilling fluids. It's used as a coolant. And now Pennsylvania has. There's other states that are looking into this too. You're drilling a hole in the ground. You are drilling through an aquifer. What's to say what gets in water?
Right. Let's get one positive note in here. And again, the work is far from over, but I think folks around Wausau are going to look back at 2023 as a year of progress in terms of setting up the infrastructure to pull PFAS out of the drinking water.
Yes. Yes. Mm-hmm. There's been a lot of people in the background working very hard to hold people accountable for this so that it stops.
Well, I'm glad you said accountable, because that's the main thing Republicans in the legislature have been fighting, is any sense of accountability and, you know, help with the cleanup potentially.
On any level. Yeah. Yeah. Totally pro business. Mm-hmm. We need business, but we need our water as well. And water is a source. It's not a resource. It's not a, you know, will last forever. I mean, what we have is what we have, and we need to take care of it.
That's right. And I mean, again, there are people just amazingly envious, licking their lips from the desert Southwest and other places about the water that we have. Nancy Stensel is our guest here. We're going to pause and take a look at the weatherology forecast here. And in doing so, remind you that we had temperatures that, again, we're just a few ticks higher than yesterday. Temperatures in the 20s and low 30s, but it does appear we have a bit of a warm-up that's on the way. And so Jennifer Vucicki from Weatherology is joining us now. And Jennifer, I got to say, before you get going, it's our final live show of the year. We've got all kinds of great programs coming up over the next 2 weeks where we revisit some interviews with some of our favorite guests, some great topics. And then we are back live on Tuesday, January 2nd. So Jennifer, I just wanted to say between now and then, I hope you have a wonderful holiday season. I don't know if you have big travel plans or what y'all do, but I hope you have something fun lined up for your holiday season.
Thank you. Yeah, I'll be visiting family in Louisville, so I'm excited to have some time to travel.
Oh, they're good. Well, that's great. I hope it's a safe trip and a lot of fun. Meanwhile, let's talk about what we have in terms of a warm-up and, you know, what we're looking at as the weekend approaches. Tell us more about that.
Yeah, well, like you said, warmer overall today as that warm front continues to push through. Highs in the mid to upper 40s for most, getting into the low 50s around Richland Center and for southwestern Wisconsin. Sunshine expected for all today. Friday, cloudy skies for most, a little bit more sunshine around Waukesha and towards the lakefront. Looks like a chance for some rain showers for the day from Wausau over towards Amory and Baldwin. Then at least a slight chance for some rain for nearly everyone else. More of a dry day and night overall around Milwaukee and Waukesha. Temperatures fairly similar tomorrow to today with highs once again in the mid to upper 40s. A few cool spots around about the lower 40s. Saturday, it looks like a chance for some rain showers for everyone. Cloudy for all and a little drop in temperatures as a cold front briefly comes through. Highs in the mid to low 40s primarily, upper 30s for central and west central Wisconsin. By Sunday, it looks like partial sunshine expected to develop for everyone. A dry end to the weekend with highs in the mid to low 40s for most. Upper 30s expected from Wausau, Wisconsin Rapids over towards Amory and Baldwin. So overall, even with the fluctuations in temperatures remaining above average, unseasonably warm throughout the rest of the week.
That all sounds great. All right, Jennifer, happy holidays. We'll see you in the new year.
Thanks so much. You too.
All right. Continue. Let's take a look at sports first here as we approach 7:18 on the clock right now. The Badger women's volleyball team is in the Final Four in Tampa. They are facing Texas tonight at 8:30 or 30 minutes after the Nebraska Pitt semifinal. And then if the Badgers win tonight, they will be in the national championship game come Sunday afternoon. And the Bucks, Giannis Antetokounmpo, broke a single game scoring record by scoring 64 points in a 140-126 victory against Indiana last night at the Fiserv Forum. Antetokounmpo passed 17,000 career points, becoming only the 100th NBA player to do so. We'll pause here. We're visiting with Nancy Stensel and Dr. Kristen Lyerly, and we hope to visit with Secretary of State Sarah Godlewski as well throughout the coming hour. Wherever you're listening across Wisconsin on this beautiful Thursday morning, when you're here, you're up north live from Lake Wissota across the Civic Media Radio Network. Back in a bit. Oh, Jimmy, it's our first Christmas without you. I played Christmas in the Caribbean a lot before living in the Caribbean, and it never gets old. It never does. We're hoping to get back there at some point over the winter as well. We are visiting with Nancy Stensel. Dr. Kristen Lyerly is here. Luke Mathers is in for Greg Bach on this Thursday, December 14th. So, Nancy, you said it's been fairly relatively quiet in terms of, you know, the mining operation potential that could happen out there. I mean, what are you looking ahead to 2024? What are your expectations, you know, in terms of environmental protection and things that you're keeping an eye on?
Well, you know, we're building ground, we're building awareness, and that's our main goal right there, building the awareness to get people to see what's going on and hopefully to show you have no social license to operate here, go away. That's the end game right there.
Okay. Well, everybody obviously appreciates the work that you're doing on that. I think nobody more so than Wisconsin Secretary of State Sarah Godlewski, who is joining us as well. And I mean, those of you watching the live video feed on Facebook, I mean, you find me a Mount Rushmore of women who are getting it done around Wisconsin like this one. Madam Secretary, how are you?
I'm good, Pat. Thanks for having me this morning. And Kristen, I didn't know I needed my Santa hat. I love it.
Well, I am glad to be the representative, and next time.
She's She's playing the role of our favorite elf. I figured your cheese head was never far away. What with you having the little cheese curd and everything over there.
That's true.
By the way, how old is the cheese curd now?
The cheese curd turned 4 on Sunday, which wow. is crazy. So I think he's actually running around with it somewhere downstairs. He sleeps with it. It's like his, you know, a lot of people have stuffies and my kid like wears around and carries his cheese curd, you know.
Yeah, he knows.
Right.
So as we've been talking about all the various things in the news with Nancy and with Kristen, and we wanted to visit with you as well, because one of the things that came up was, of course, the case of the fake electors, in essence, being adjudicated and having to, you know, settle a lawsuit and file that they are rescinding their false claims. And yet, Sarah, somehow one of them is still a member of the Wisconsin Elections Commission. And, you know, I'm sure you feel as strongly about it as a lot of the rest of us.
Yes. I mean, just on like purely like moral and ethical grounds, there's no reason why Commissioner Spindell should be sitting on the Election Commission calling balls and strikes with how our elections are run. But it was this obvious connection when my office received notification that Robert Spindell, as a result of this legal settlement, was acknowledging two things. The first is that he was not a duly elected elector from the state of Wisconsin in 2020. And second, that he signed and submitted the certificate of votes, which was a false document, and submitted it to my office and asked for that document to be removed and to just disregard it from our record. And I'm just not going to look the other way when a public election official lies to my office and to the people of Wisconsin about the most important election document, the Electoral College document. He needs to be removed. It's clearly that he doesn't have the moral compass and he can't be trusted, and the state of Wisconsin deserves better.
You know, those papers were filed, you know, with your office, and yet there's not a lot of election related authority there.
No.
And yet somehow Republicans have claimed that they are listening to or considering a bill that would invest more power into the Secretary of State's office. The Senate Elections Committee Chair, Dan Knodel, talked about it. And then folks actually read the bill. And while it says the Secretary of State is invested with more elections power if this thing becomes law, that's not really where the power goes, Sarah, is it?
Well, that's just it, Pat. It's once again this power grab game by the Republican extremists where they're like, oh, we want to give these powers to the Secretary of State. But really what the bill says is that the Elections Committee in the legislature would be really running our elections. And as we know right now, our legislature, first, does not look like Wisconsin because of the gerrymandering. And second, we don't need to give the legislature any more power that they do have, and then trying to use the Secretary of State as this puppet that they want to manipulate to do what they believe is best for elections.
Yeah, there's no manipulating the Secretary of State or turning her into nobody puts Sarah in a corner, right. Except here in the corner of the screen. Kristen and Nancy, let me turn to you because you both have been candidates. You both monitor the legislators in Northeast Wisconsin and Central Wisconsin, respectively. Kristen, the issue of you know these fake electors and Devin Lemahue, the Senate Republican leader, refusing to remove Bob Spindell from the Elections Commission. Is that something that you think is going to follow Republican candidates in 2024?
I do. And I think that the people of Wisconsin are very concerned. I mean, we have an admitted fake elector running elections in Wisconsin. We heard it from our Secretary of State. We hear it over and over in the news. I mean, if you are truly concerned about election integrity, this should be a giant problem. This should be something that we are all screaming from the treetops about. We need election integrity here, true election integrity. And what the Republicans are doing, what Bob Spindell is doing here, is just dismantling what is truly a safe, decentralized system where our local electors are deeply committed to making sure that our elections are fair and just. So yeah, I think that the people of Wisconsin are not going to forget this. The people of Wisconsin want fairness. And, you know, everything that Sarah just said, take it to heart, because we deserve better.
Nancy, what does it say about all the many people who are elections officials in Marathon County and all of the adjoining counties? You know, you can hardly have a grand conspiracy with, you know, 1,800 local clerks, and they have to still feel so besmirched by this these ongoing lies about 2020.
I'm sure they did, because I've sat in on like where they've done recounts. I've worked the polls already, and it is done in a top-notch way. I mean, there's always accountability from the minute you walk into that office to cast your vote, all the way through the paperwork, that the way it is handled, the way it is sealed and sent, you know, to be recounted. There's no allowing for mistakes. And then when you get a joker like this, who's just blatantly lying through his teeth, you know, what does that say for, these are our friends and neighbors that work at the polls, and they do a darn good job.
They do. Sarah, in the 30 seconds roughly that I have left, I imagine that this is not the last we're going to hear from you in 2024 on the issue of the trustworthiness of Wisconsin elections and the falsehoods that some people are spreading about them.
Yeah, and I just want to kind of build from what Nancy said. I mean, the fact that Commissioner Spindall admitted that he submitted a falsified document, this misinformation is what has caused the threat to our election workers, to our poll workers. And so this is something that these are public workers that are actually getting the wrath of his misinformation. And it's awful. And we've got to remove him.
And that's where we're very fortunate to have somebody in your position to call that out quite publicly. Come back again as there are conditions that we need to know about. Secretary of State Sarah Godlewski, thank you so very much.
Thanks for having me, guys. It's always good to see you.
All right. Nancy Stensel, thank you as well. Happy holidays.
Yes.
And Kristen Larley's going to hang around for Hometown Health next. You're up north. All right, we've been doing a lot of holiday tunes, but this subject is something related to the holiday season, but unfortunately isn't nearly as festive as everything else, because there's some real concerns about domestic violence and the holiday season, Kristen, which is what's motivating this week's edition of Hometown Health.
Mm-hmm. I had the joy of spending last weekend with some really incredible, powerful, wonderful people. And one of the people I met was our guest today, Millie Gonzalez. She is currently the director of Help of Door County, which is an organization that advocates for victims of domestic violence. But she is soon to be the associate director of End Domestic Abuse, which is our statewide domestic violence coalition. And we're here today to talk about domestic violence, which is really prevalent in our community, and how it tends to escalate over the holidays. So Millie, thank you so much for joining us this morning.
Thank you for having us, especially speaking on such an important topic.
Mm-hmm. Why don't we start by defining what is domestic abuse and violence for our audience that doesn't really understand what this means?
So a lot of times people think that domestic violence has to be physical or has to be sexual in order for it to be labeled domestic violence. But in actuality, the way that I define it would be anytime you have an imbalance of power and control and equality, so coercive control, that could be financial in nature, that could be verbal, that could be using threats and coercion. Any imbalance of power and control plus fear would equal domestic violence. So it has to have that fear component. And I know that there's confusion oftentimes on what's unhealthy and what's abusive, but in reality, that's the distinguisher. An imbalance of power and control plus fear will equal domestic violence.
So it doesn't actually have to be physical. It could be so many other things.
Yeah. So we end up seeing coercion being used. You know, one of the big stats that I give is over 99.8% 8% of all victims of domestic violence have also been abused financially. So that's not having access to income. That's not, or it is, it shows up as not having access to income, having to give up all your income, having to have like a set allowance. It could be minimizing and denying their behavior. It could show up with isolation. So limiting your access to the outside world, who you're allowed to have conversations with, what you're allowed to read, where you're allowed to go. And I know that sometimes people get confused with these things, but it could also manifest in a relationship, especially over the holidays. I don't really want to go and hang out with your family. They don't really like me, or it could be an argument that starts right before getting together with family and friends. And if there's a dynamic of fear or past use of violence, that could be very sinister as well. And the repercussions that happen using your children to harass, whether you're still within that romantic relationship or that familial relationship or not, threatening to commit suicide, threatening to hurt a pet, hurting pets, destroying things, throwing things, using your privilege, and just, it could be in both ways, right? So a woman could be abusive to a man and then say, go ahead and call the police. Are they going to believe you if I'm the one that's going to say otherwise? But it could also manifest in the other way. Like if you're in a LGBTQ relationship, using your privilege, if you don't necessarily identify as trans, but when you call law enforcement and saying like, this really isn't what that partner is saying. So it manifests in so many sneaky ways. And it's just understanding what is healthy so that we don't engage in that unhealthy behavior.
I think it's important to be aware of that line, especially at the holidays, and especially with extended family. And I'm by no means trying to sound anti-family here, but there's a lot of dynamic sometimes when it's just the couple or just the nuclear family that changes when you're in that extended family. Sometimes you take on traits that you have rather outgrown, and your partner looks at you and like, what is happening to you? What are you going back to? And, or just there's that one relative on the other side, you know, of that, you know, picks a fight or whatever the case may be. Tension is normal. But there's that line where it's like, okay, this is no longer just joshing. This is no longer just one relative that I don't like to be around. This has crossed some kind of a line. And, you know, it's important to say, you know, it's not just me. I'm not just imagining things. There really has been some kind of a violation here.
Yeah. I think especially that feeling of walking on eggshells, not being able to express myself or to be who I am and feeling like I'm constantly walking on eggshells, that's a huge red flag. So violence typically happens in a cycle, and it doesn't always happen in a cycle of violence, right? But typically in the beginning, you see like a really healthy period, that honeymoon period where everybody really excited to be in that relationship. And I'm sure a lot of people can relate to that first date feeling. I'm wearing my makeup, I'm wearing my Spanx, I'm just showing up in my best self, right? And then this calm period enters a relationship where things are normal and life is happening and everything seems to be very calm. But typically when that tension starts building up, or there is some sort of conflict, whether it's an argument, whether it's a disagreement, and you start feeling like you're not safe to express who you are, you're not safe to say what you're thinking, you're not feeling safe within that relationship, that's a huge red flag. And understanding, is this coming out of fear, in that imbalance of power and control, or is that just coming from our uncomfortability of having those difficult conversations, right? And then typically in a domestic violent relationship, a violent incident will happen after that tension building. So that violent incident, again, doesn't have to be physical. It doesn't have to be sexual. It could be being called outside of your name, right? And then minimizing and denying that behavior. So if it could be like, I didn't call you a witch. I said you were acting like a witch, right? When I asked my partner, you know, when you called me a witch, that really hurt my feelings and I want to have discussion about it. Those tactics are what is domestic violence, that gaslighting, or just denying that, or even the name calling itself. And then another thing that we have to remember is there can be tactics that don't seem abusive, like just cutting that other person just out completely and ignoring them. And you have to be very aware of these different tactics. So I always say that if you're feeling unsafe in your home, or you're feeling like, oh my gosh, some of these tactics are present in our relationship, that you call your local domestic violence program, which you can look up on either End Domestic Abuse Wisconsin site or the National Network to End Domestic Violence, and connect with an advocate in your community, because they will be the best experts to get you connected with the resources within your community.
And Pat has shared a couple of those URLs there on our screen, but thehotline.org as well as endabusewi.org both have resources. They can get you connected to the people, the things that you need to be able to find the resources to get out of these or to deal with these difficult situations.
Absolutely.
Millie, I want to just focus for a second on some of the other things that surround domestic abuse, because we know domestic abuse and violence don't exist in a vacuum. There are lots of other social factors that contribute to domestic violence. Tell us a little bit about what else you see in people's lives.
Yeah, so one of the things that I always say is whatever happens in the home is going to be reflected in culture and society. And whatever is happening in culture and society is going to be reflective in that home, right? So understanding that violence doesn't happen in a vacuum. So when we're teaching about the roots of domestic violence, we're always talking about the roots of oppression, no matter how that may be. So that could be ableism, that could be adultism, that could be racism, that could be homophobia, that could be all sorts of these isms, these systems of oppression, right? Where we have an imbalance of power and control, and we have an imbalance of people being treated with equality and equity. Plus that fear component, right? So a lot of times I'll get pushback and people will say, Millie, why are you speaking on immigration issues? Or why are you speaking about the importance of everybody being treated with equality and respect, and not understanding what that has to do with domestic violence? But at the end of the day, it's in the core of what leads to violence. We will not be able to dismantle or get rid of sexual violence or domestic violence until we get rid of all oppression, period. Because anytime that somebody feels that they have the right or the entitlement to have power and control over another individual without being treated with respect, and there's that fear component, that's violence, right? So the analogy that I always give when I'm questioned on this is, let's say that there's flour in a cake, and then there's egg, there's salt, there's baking powder, all of these ingredients that we have that would make a system, right? And then we make this beautiful chocolate cake, we put the frosting on it, and then someone says, Millie, just speak about domestic violence. I said, I would love to serve you this cake and say, please pull the eggs out. It's impossible, right? And that's society and that is culture. We don't live in these silos. All of these things are interconnected, and especially when it comes to oppression and looking at things in a smaller scale and a bigger scale. And when people are having a hard time understanding oppression just in the world, I mean, look at what's happening right now in Gaza. I always say, like, let's bring it back to something that we're really familiar with, and that could be in the home. And then let's look at these micro issues and these imbalances of power and control, and then show that in a more macro level in the world or in culture and society.
There's one comment that came in on Facebook. Mary posted, growing up with an abuser leaves long life effects, lifelong effects. When I was younger, I was afraid to say anything and thought it was normal. Years now and lots of therapy later, I feel it's helped a lot, but it will always be an ongoing process. If I can, I hope I'm not going too far afield in asking this next question, but it just seems for various reasons, we don't have to get into them all, but everything from toxic masculinity to whatever it is in the water is making more people feel more emboldened to just to be mean, to just be, you know, jerks. From a peer perspective, Is there anything you can share as far as, and I will go ahead and just use men in this example, but if you notice that a buddy or a brother or somebody, you suspect their language is getting to be a little harsh and maybe even their behavior, is there advice that you'd give for them that can, you know, not necessarily lead to confrontation or violence, but in some way, shape, or form, diffuse a situation or get somebody to look inward at their behavior toward their partner?
Absolutely. I think especially our nation is polarized. People have become more polarized. And I think the most important thing is to engage in these conversations while establishing appropriate boundaries. And a boundary isn't like, if you keep violating or if you keep disrespecting me, I am going to not talk to you, right? Like the boundary would be, if you keep disrespecting me, I'm going to end this conversation and we're not going to speak until we're ready to speak with each other with respect and then follow through on that boundary. So I think the most important thing is to note that we're not having these uncomfortable conversations. We're not establishing boundaries. This emotional intelligence that folks assume are being taught at home or these skill sets are being taught at schools, in reality, they're not. And understanding, just like when I talk about domestic violence not being in a vacuum, we have to look around us. What are we seeing in the media? What are we seeing portrayed in television? What are we seeing our neighbors behave like? Are we calling out that sort of behavior in a loving way, right? And saying, I don't really like the way that you spoke to our cousin at Thanksgiving dinner. Can we please have a conversation about that? Or have you recognized the way that you're holding privilege or you are holding power and control in this moment? And are you seeing the effects that it's having within our family? And I think that these uncomfortable conversations can be had, but we have to be willing to have them.
And if you'd like more information, you can go to thehotline.org or endabusewi.org. Millie, thank you so much. Millie Gonzalez, it's appreciated greatly. We wish you all the best. Have a great holiday season.
Thank you.
All right.
It's been grateful to you, Millie.
Kristen and Luke will join us again right after this. You're up north. All right, all my favorite divas are here. Mariah, Kristen, Luke.
Woohoo!
Ready to wrap up the year. and for the purposes of our last live show, we'll just skip right past Christmas and Hanukkah, and we'll head toward New Year's Eve. Luke, New Year's Eve, is it a big deal with you? Do you do much for celebrating? Is it always a work day?
It depends on the year, I think, for New Year's. It's always, growing up, I liked, with the family used to go bowling. We'd do like the midnight kind of blacklight bowling. And that was always a lot of fun. Big fan of that. But it kind of varies year to year. It's been weird, I think, since COVID. And we haven't really found the same routine that we used to have before. And so I don't know what we're going to do this year yet.
I feel like we're all in that vein, actually. Yeah. Of like, we're post COVID, but we're still not doing all the things we used to do. It just still kind of feels like a different world. Kristen, New Year's Eve for you, big deal? Not a big deal?
Yeah, I like to work on New Year's Eve because then maybe I get to deliver the New Year's Day baby.
Very nice.
That's amazing. Yeah. Look at that. See, I thought you were just going to be like the holiday pay was good or, you know, the hospitals are more quiet. But that is a great reason to want to work on New Year's Eve.
Yeah, you guys drink your champagne. I'm going to have a baby over here with these folks. Yeah.
What's the holiday rom-com? Is it called New Year's Eve? And it's one where Seth Meyers is the expectant father and his wife, and there's like a contest in the hospital to see who gets the first baby of the new year because they get all these prizes. And the Seth Meyers character and his wife, they actually do have the first baby, but they see the other couple is so much more in need, and so they lie about what time their baby came at. And it was just, you know, and again, part of it's being married to an OBGYN, but it was such a cool moment, you know, for that first baby of the new year, because you get all this attention. And yeah, in some cases, you get like big prizes just for when you decide to go here I am, you know.
That's not quite how it goes. But
say, are you sure?
Very, very oversimplification of what I don't that know. Process I've, is. Pat.
I've heard Sherry dictate some of her cases, and she quite often just, you know, just goes and, you know, the voice to text command doesn't always pick up on it.
I have definitely helped to expedite or slow down births around the time of New Year's and pitted my patients against each other about racing to either get it done or to get the tax break. That's always the thing. Like, do you want the baby before so you get the tax break, or do you want the joy of having the New Year's baby?
Yes. That is the very important thing is that, yeah, you could be born at, you know, 11:58, but then you, the parents, you get the tax break for the whole year for that kid. So it is kind of a win-win. Although I'm not quite sure I understood you perfectly. It almost sounds like you were setting up patients to race one another, like it's your own personal soapbox derby. Like, you know, I'm gonna give so much, you know, Pitocin to room three. Meanwhile,
I'm behind
curtain four. I'm gonna do this over here.
If only I had the Kentucky Derby noise just ready to go. That would have been just terrific.
Hey, can I give a shout out to my classmates? Sure. We got together last night. You know, like some high school classes get together for their reunions. My class, the class of 87, Kakana High School, gets together every year to do a holiday fundraiser. So we met at the pub on the south side of Kakana. People, my classmates came out of the woodwork to donate food and supplies to the Loaves and Fishes shelter, to one of the veterans groups in Appleton, and to the community coat closet in Menasha. Thousands of dollars. We raised $4,000 last year. I haven't seen the final tally for this year, but it was such a joy. And I want to give a shout out to Pam and Mary and Sharon, who do this incredibly beautiful, generous thing every year.
Way to go. And for Kakana, the Fighting Kakas, or whatever.
We're the ghosts. Kakana,
whatever.
We're the galloping ghosts.
Okay. All right.
Can ghosts gallop? Is that a thing?
It's a thing.
It's a
Red Grange
thing. Red Grange from way back in the day. No? Okay, never mind.
But Kakana also has this, like, this horse that trots out onto the field and hands the person on the horse is a ghost, and they hand the official the football.
How can everybody see them? How can everybody see them if they're a ghost?
Well, you know, sometimes ghosts want to be seen. You know, Casper and, you know, Ghostbusters, the Stay Puft Marshmallow Man, for example. Wait, do you actually bring a live horse out onto the football field before these games? Okay, it's not a person in a horse costume. Because you've been a mascot for things. So I didn't know maybe you were actually
That's different.
Okay. If you'd have told me that you were also a horse mascot, I'd really start to wonder if you were one of these, you know, fur babies or whatever they call
At
them.
At that point, you know? It becomes a problem.
Yes, it does. But don't they worry then about horse apples on the field interfering with the game, shall we say?
Then they don't. The horse doesn't actually live on the field. It just goes out there, hands off the ball, and then leaves.
Okay. All right. Interesting traditions here. So
it's got to be a very well-regimented feeding time so that therefore the horse doesn't have to take care of its business then when it brings
I don't think
football.
We need to get into the digestive system of a horse and, you know, when to
How
feed
did
it
we
and
get here?
Roger, our regular contributor on Facebook, types in
Merry Christmas, Roger.
Happy New Year to everyone at Up North News. See you next year. That's awfully nice.
And hooray, Mary, 87, 80, 80, 80, 80, 87. You know it, sister. Mm-hmm.
Luke, I don't know that I've asked if you have a big Christmas holiday plan.
I have right now the horror that Santa Claus is coming to town because I'm redoing the basement in hopes to host next weekend. And the floor has been a little bit of a nightmare over the last couple. So it's kind of a...
you were going to do finger quotes around nightmare, but you decided, no, it just is a straight up nightmare.
No, it was nightmare. Yeah. There's also a timing cue. I didn't do both hands, but it's all good.
This is Luke's like real life nightmare before Christmas.
Yeah, it's well. I've told Todd on his show that Santa Claus is coming to town now is not really bringing me holiday cheer. It's a threat that I need to get the basement done in time for Santa Claus to come to town. So,
oh dear, how many people?
The immediate family, really, only so about a dozen of us. Little ones though, crawling around means the floor needs to be nice. So.
Yes,
and
yes.
Is the chimney in order?
It is. That's the most important part. That is clean and all good to go, but least of my concerns at this point.
Mm-hmm. Good. Glad to hear.
What about you, Pat? All right. Are you excited for your time for your holiday plans?
I'm very excited because, again, when you've got, you know, two adult daughters and each one has their two kids and they're in different states. So, you know, it's nice to know that we're all going to be able to get together, which is why I'm taking a little extended time off and, you know, get all four grandkids together. They only get to do that maybe twice a year. And so, yeah, I'm so looking forward to it. So that's it. 250 morning shows in the books. So thanks, you guys. I appreciate it very much.
Glad it's to be here for 250. I expect my game ball to be in the mail.
Your game ball. Yeah, you and Giannis. Kristen, Merry Christmas to you. And I know you will be part of some of our special shows next week for the holidays. So
yeah, it's going to be a blast.
All right. You take care. And thanks to all of you for being with us up here on the lake. Again, for the next 2 weeks, a combination of pre-recorded fresh shows and a few best ofs. We hope to continue to join us here on the Civic Media Radio Network each weekday. And we'll be back live on Tuesday, January 2nd. Merry Christmas. Happy holidays. Have a safe and blessed holiday season. See you next year.